心地。Pilot Thunderbird 1, Scott Tracy. Space Monitor, John Tracy. Pilot Thunderbird 2, Virgil Tracy. Astronaut Thunderbird 4, Gordon Tracy. Astronaut Thunderbird 3, Alan Tracy. Engineer, Brains. London Agent, Lady Penelope. Recorded in video sound. And super monophase. Ocean Pioneer 1, a giant new supertanker, is making her maiden voyage after successfully completing her sea trial. She has been specially designed and built to carry a highly dangerous and highly combustible cargo of liquid alstrene. The huge sloop tanker needs only 3 men to crew her. On this first commercial run, she carries as a special observer the commander of another tanker fleet. The weather is fair, the sea, smooth and calm. But Ocean Pioneer 1 is sailing into danger.
Yes, sir, Commander. 6 more like Ocean Pioneer, and we'd have the most modern fleet afloat.
Well, that's if my line don't catch you up, Johnson. My company want to cut the overheads by getting at least 8 tankers, just like Ocean Pioneer, in the service as soon as possible.
I can't say I blame you, sir. 3 men looking after 120,000 tons of seaworthy steel certainly makes the balance sheet look good. What is it, Collins?
The reactor's overcompensating, sir.
I'll switch to manual, Collins. I'll turn it.
On manual now, sir.
All right. Give me your readings as I turn.
054 rising. 059 rising.
There seems to be quite a large amount of mist ahead.
That's strange. Those weather boys don't usually slip up on that sort of thing. Did they mention mist in their weather report?
063 rising. 068 still rising, Captain.
As Ocean Pioneer 1 sails closer towards a strange bank of mist, the captain tries in vain to bring the ship's nuclear-powered generators under control. But the reactor gauge continues to turn unnervingly towards critical mass point. The mysterious bank of mist completely envelops the huge tanker. And as Ocean Pioneer 1 disappears from view, the only sounds to be heard are the throbbing of her engines and the deep warning note of her radiation siren. Until she explodes in a vast ball of incandescent flame and sinks without trace beneath the waves. Jeff Tracy suspects sabotage and instructs International Rescue's special London agent, Lady Penelope, to attend the launching of the new supertanker, Ocean Pioneer 2. Lady Penelope, through her many connections in the social world, is invited to launch the giant supertanker herself. Nobody would suspect for a minute that the beautiful lady socialite is in fact one of International Rescue's most successful agents.
Yes, your ladyship. As chairman, I can say that men certainly appreciate your doing us the honor today.
My pleasure, Lord Worden, I assure you.
If you will just step this way, dear lady.
It gives me great pleasure to name the ship. Ocean Pioneer is left. May God bless all who sail. Oh, a lovely sight, Lord Worden. A lovely sight. Incredible, isn't it, how they can fit these ships before launching nowadays.
At their secret island base, Jeff Tracy and the other members of International Rescue are watching a telecast of the launching.
and Nile. As Ocean Pioneer II hits the water for the first time, the crowd goes wild.
Yet, for all the excitement of the day, there must be many whose thoughts turn to the ill-fated Ocean Pioneer One that disappeared so tragically only 6 months ago.
Yeah, I'll say.
Hold it, Scott. Look, there's
this has been your first major launch. It must have been a great thrill.
Oh, indeed it has. The flags, the people, and such a wonderful ship.
Thank you, Lady Benedict. And now, viewers, we leave the shipyards at Clydeside and return you to the studio.
Right. All we've got to do now is to wait for Penelope to report in. I wonder if she's found anything interesting.
Lady Penelope relays her message to Jeff Tracy over International Rescue's own special televideo link.
Ah, there's Penny now. Go ahead, Penny.
Jeff, my plan to launch Ocean Pioneer 2 was entirely successful.
Yes, we saw the whole thing on television, Penny. Did anybody suspect anything?
Well, I don't think so. Lord Worden was only too delighted to have me on the platform.
How about the ship? Did you give it the once-over?
Yes, Jeff, I gave it the once-over, but I found nothing that indicated sabotage. I really believe the ship is in no danger, Jeff.
Well, I'm glad to have your assurance, Penelope. Thanks for investigating it for me.
You're most welcome, Jeff.
You know, despite what Penelope says, I'm still worried about that craft.
But, Father, I don't get you.
What's there to worry you, Father? It doesn't make sense.
Listen, boys. If Ocean Pioneer 1 can blow up in the middle of the ocean for no apparent reason, anything can make sense.
You mean, if it happened once, it can happen again?
That's it exactly, Alan. I've just got a feeling we're going to hear more about that ship once she's left on her maiden voyage.
John Tracy, International Rescue's space monitor, flashes onto the televideo link with news of a distress call.
Well, I'll be...
Gee, already?
Okay, John. Let's have it.
There's a distress call coming from Oahu in the Pacific, Father, requiring immediate action.
What's the trouble, John?
A typhoon just hit the island, Father, and struck the hospital full force. The foundations are crumbling, and the patients are in extreme danger.
Right, John. Brief Scott when he's airborne. This has got to be quick.
FAB, switching to standby now.
Well, at least it's not the tanker in trouble. Okay, Scott, on your way.
Yes, sir.
Scott Tracy enters the huge underground hangars that lay hidden beneath International Rescue's secret island base. He quickly prepares for takeoff, and as the swimming pool slides back to reveal the hidden launching site, powerful rocket engines lift Thunderbird 1 up into the sky on its rescue mission to the small Pacific island of Oahu. As soon as Scott is airborne and on course, he calls base.
Thunderbird 1 to International Rescue Headquarters, heading across the Pacific on course 324/007.
Okay, Scott. Any more information?
A tidal wave has undermined the footings of the main hospital on the island. John is still getting details. We'll need Thunderbird 2 with double crew and pod 3.
FAB, Scott. Leave it with me. Right, Virgil? On your way with pod 3.
Okay, Father.
Alan?
Yes, Father?
You're due in the space satellite at 1500. That leaves you out.
Yes, Father.
Gordon?
Yes, sir?
You'll double crew with Virgil on your way.
Yes, sir.
Alan and Gordon Tracy take off in the hugely powerful Thunderbird 2 and set course for the island of Oahu. Meanwhile, Scott makes another televideo call to base. But static interference breaks up the signal.
Go ahead, Scott.
I'll be landing in the danger zone in 2 minutes. I'm briefing Bill and Gordon. Gordon to John.
Denton, get brains out here.
Glad to be, Mr. Chase.
What do you reckon's causing the interference, Father?
Hold it a second, Alan. Virgil's coming through. I don't get it. Virgil's lost contact, too. This could be very serious. Ah, brains. What do you make of this?
I'm afraid that John up in the satellite is now out of contact too, Mr. Tracy. I think it only affects transmissions via the satellite.
Yes, but it cleared itself then, didn't it?
Yes, Mr. Tracy. But the interference signal appears to be much stronger this time.
Alan?
Yes, Father?
You're due to relieve John in 6 hours anyway. Can you take off now?
I guess so, Father.
Brains, you'll need information from the space satellite in order to trace this fault, right?
Yes, Mr. Tracy.
All right, then, I want you to go with Alan. We've got a complete communications blackout on our hands, and that leaves us vulnerable.
International Rescue could fall down on the job for the very first time. Right. On your way, boys.
Alan Tracy and Brains descend into the huge underground hangars and make their way to Thunderbird 3. They are soon ready for takeoff, and the sleek red craft thunders into space towards its rendezvous with John Tracy aboard the orbiting communication satellite, Thunderbird 5. Thunderbird 3 successfully completes docking procedure with the satellite.
Well, Brains, there's your recording of the interference. But it seems a mighty long way to come just to pick up a reel of tape.
Not at all, Alan. For analytical purposes, a recording made outside the Earth's atmosphere is much cleaner.
Okay, Brains, let's move. The sooner I get you back to the base, the sooner you'll be able to work out an answer. See you then, boy.
See you, John. Oh, and hey, don't forget, you owe me 6 hours.
Yeah, see you.
Brains and John Tracy enter the airlock that leads back to Thunderbird 3. And prepare for the return journey to Earth.
Stand by for blast off.
Meanwhile, back at International Rescue Headquarters, the mysterious electrical interference continues to make communications difficult.
Is there no news yet, Mr. Tracy?
No, Kirano, not a whisper. That interference is still with us. It's terrifying to realize how much we depend on communication in this rescue business.
And Mr. Brains? You haven't heard from him?
No, Kirano, we don't know anything. With all this interference in the air, long-distance transmissions are out. As far as I know, only transmissions over short distances are possible. Between Thunderbirds 1 and 2, for instance.
I suppose I'd better go and start organizing lunch. It'll be just the four of us again.
Yes, Tintin, I guess so.
Ah, that will be the mail plane, I expect.
No, Kirano, that's Thunderbird 1. Tintin, you'd better lay an extra place. It looks as if Scott will be joining us after all.
Scott Tracy, tired and mud-stained, is returning from the arduous rescue mission in the Pacific. The electrical interference means that he can't use the radio to announce his arrival. He can only hope that the landing site is prepared and ready.
Well, not much point in using the radio with this level of interference. Well, Father, I'm coming in now. I just hope that you're ready for me.
Thanks to the ever-alert Jeff Tracy, everything is ready for a safe landing.
Hello, folks.
Scott, how did it go?
Well, fine, Father. We managed to shore up all the walls with hydrostats. But not before the isolation ward collapsed. Boy, that was close.
Any casualties?
Oh, no, Father. There were no cases in the ward at the time.
Virgil and Gordon, are they all right?
Sure, Tintin. And even muddier than me. They should be back soon. We found we could contact each other when we were close, despite the interference, Father.
Well, at least that's something, Scott. You'd better go and get cleaned up now, then.
Sure thing, Dad.
By the way, Mr. Tracy, the intertelecast on Ocean Pioneer 2 is almost due.
Thank goodness we don't have to contend with interference from outside transmissions. I'll take a look at the program while we're waiting for Virgil and Gordon to get back.
Virgil and Gordon land Thunderbird 2 safely, and another international rescue operation is brought to a successful conclusion. But meanwhile, in his laboratory, Brains, assisted by Tintin, is working around the clock in an attempt to solve the mystery of the strange electrical interference.
Can I hear the tape once more, Tintin?
Coming up, Brains.
Right, Tintin. Keep that sound in your mind. Now, listen.
In another part of the house, Jeff Tracy is watching the intertelecast on the launching of Ocean Pioneer 2.
And with the last cargo of liquid Alstarine, Ocean Pioneer 2 sails in the blue waters of the Mediterranean. Just 3 men, 1 ship, and 200,000 tons of nature's latest aid to mankind, liquid Alstarine.
Ocean Pioneer 2 sails on with her dangerous cargo of liquid Alstarine. The weather is fine. The sea smooth and calm. On the bridge, the captain is a little irritable. The immense media coverage has been a strain for each of the crew members.
Jensen, for goodness sake, we're well clear of port now. Check your radio circuits instead of playing with that confounded siren.
Yes, sir.
Switch to auto, number two.
Auto it is, sir.
Pioneer 2 to Pioneer Base. This is Ocean Pioneer 2. Are you receiving me?
This is Pioneer Base at Port of London. Go ahead, Pioneer 2.
Everything under control. All systems go. Our next check call time for 1800 hours.
Thank you, Pioneer 2. Have an act.
Steering course 259 by 354 at 53 knots, sir.
Oh, fine, Jensen. Well, number two, we'll be home and dry in next to no time at all.
Back at International Rescue Headquarters, Benz is certain that he has solved the problem of the mysterious electrical interference.
Can I see you in the laboratory right away, Mr. Tracy?
Trouble, Brains?
We've traced the interference, Mr. Tracy, but it presents a few problems.
Okay, Brains, I'll be right with you.
Brains has set up a special experiment to prove his theory. Inside a sealed, radiation-proof cabinet, two test tubes marked A and B are held by remote-controlled mechanical hands.
Just setting up, Mr. Tracy.
In one test tube, there is a small quantity of a high-density liquid fuel. In the other, a small quantity of a low-density substance called OD-60.
Coming up.
Brains begins the experiment by playing back a tape recording of the mysterious electrical interference.
Microphone on.
Microphone on.
Our experiments show that the result of close proximity of a high-density liquid fuel and a low-density substance known as OD-60 produces high impedance waves, which can interrupt and cut off radio communication on our bandwidth for a given distance. Microphone off, please, Tintin.
That's the cause. Now the cure.
Too fast, Mr. Tracy. The experiment is not quite finished.
No, sir. It sure isn't.
All right, what are we waiting for?
Observe the contents of the test tubes, Mr. Tracy. By even closer proximity, further chemical action takes place until, finally, they...
Okay, Brains, what does it all add up to?
It adds up to a very large explosion in whatever area one finds both A and B. A being Alstorine, and B being...
Alstorine, you say?
Yes, Mr. Tracy. Alstorine and sea fungi found close to the currents of the Gulf Stream, OD-60. Used to make dog food, of all things. Scott, have you got a fix yet?
Scott points to a position that he's marked on a large navigational chart with a large red cross. The last recorded position of Ocean Pioneer 1.
Yes, Briggs, but it just doesn't make sense. Working on Allen's orbits and the time of the blackouts, I land smack in the middle of the Mediterranean. Miles from the Gulf Stream and miles from the nearest landfall.